Welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Norma Walden, Chair of the Club's International Relations Forum and Program Chair for today. We welcome our audience here and on radio and invite everyone to visit us on the Internet at commonwealthclub.org. Our speaker today, Karen Kiefer, worked with FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, since it was established in 1979 until her retirement in 2006. She was a senior program officer in the Individual Assistance Branch of FEMA's Recovery Division, developing legislative initiatives, regulations, and program and procedures manuals for disaster workers. She saw plenty of action working in assistance programs in over two dozen disasters, such as 9/11, NATO exercises, the response to the Oklahoma City bombing when she reported directly to President Clinton, and four California earthquakes, including Northridge. Karen implemented the National Board for Emergency Food and Shelter for the nation's homeless beginning in 1983. Responsibilities before retirement included serving as National Individual Assistance Training Manager for nearly 1,200 disaster assistance employees. I've known Karen for several years because she is one of the program coordinators for our Commonwealth Club International Relations Forum and has organized excellent programs. Some of you in the audience have attended her programs. I particularly admire Karen for her service with the Peace Corps in Nigeria and Liberia that was prior to FEMA. Later, she founded the Northern California Peace Corps Association. Please welcome Karen Kiefer.
You might remember FEMA called these names in three successive administrations. Have you ever asked yourself how a singular agency could have each of these names? It's like being on a roller coaster ride. I was on that ride from 1979, as Norma says, when FEMA was established, until after Hurricane Katrina and Rita hit in 2005. As one of many public servants who care deeply about providing timely and appropriate assistance to disaster survivors, my emotions might come through from time to time this evening. Let's start at the beginning. In 1979, there were over 100 parts of the federal government that dealt with disasters, hazards, and emergencies. So the National Governors Association was upset and sought to decrease this number with which state and local governments had to work. So they went to President Carter and said, ask him to if they could centralize the federal emergency functions under a singular agency. He did so by establishing FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, on April Fool's Day, 1979. Some agencies that were brought into FEMA, including the Federal Insurance Administration, which you know for their flood insurance program, the U.S. Fire Administration, which supports our nation's fire service in a variety of ways, the National Weather Service Community Preparedness Program, which helps predict disasters and where they're going to hit, such as Hurricane Irma, and GSA's Federal Preparedness Program, which did the continuity of government. Also, HUD's Federal Disaster Assistance Program and the Civil Defense from the Department of Defense's Civil Preparedness Agency. The Civil Defense Staff College became Emergency Management Institute, which is also part of FEMA. We also coordinate resources from many other federal agencies and departments, such as food from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The SBA not only has disaster loans for businesses, but also for individuals to help them get more than back on their feet, but to rebuild their homes. The Department of Transportation has a number of transportation needs getting resources to the site. And we work with a lot of voluntary agencies, like 26 voluntary agencies that we work with, including Red Cross, Salvation Army, the Mennonites, a lot of the different church groups, etc. FEMA's mission is, in emergencies, to save lives and protect property and public health and safety, or to lessen or avert the impact of catastrophes. This includes preparedness for a nuclear attack. Remember 1979, the old Dr. Strangelove days when we were fearing an attack by Russia and were told to duck and cover. And then we went to evacuating people from the path of a hurricane as an emergency. But more often, we just help with wildland fires by providing reimbursement to the local fire service that responds to wildland fires. Major disasters is another part of FEMA, the natural catastrophes, as you know, earthquakes, wind, floods, hurricanes, volcanic eruptions, landslides, mudslides, drought, snowstorms in places like Georgia and the Carolinas that aren't that familiar with snowstorms, or regardless of any cause, the man-made disasters like fire or explosion in any part of the United States and its territories. Besides natural disasters, we have responded to such events like the contamination of Love Canal, which became a Superfund site, the accident at Three Mile Island nuclear power plant, the Cuban refugee crisis back in 1980, the Murrah building bombing, the two World Trade Center bombings, the one in 1992 and the one in 2001. The disaster declaration process. First of all, as you might know, when there's a disaster, the first responders are at the local level, your local fire, police, and CERT teams, or in San Francisco, your NERT teams, Neighborhood Emergency Response Teams. If it goes beyond the ability of the local government to handle, then they request assistance from the state, from the governor and his emergency management office. When it grows beyond the capability of both state and local governments to handle, the governor can request a major disaster declaration from the president. It can be done either orally or preferably in writing. But for events such as hurricanes that strike or a tornado or whatever where it's really bad, or even a 9/11, it can be oral, and the president can declare it immediately over the phone, with paperwork to follow, of course. By giving examples of leadership in each administration, I'll try to show you the following: how politics impact disaster declarations, how politics impacts the four components of disasters, which are preparedness, response, recovery, and mitigation, and how politics impact FEMA staff and disaster survivors or victims. Okay, think back to the 1980s. What was the worst potential disaster our nation faced at that time? Nuclear attack from Russia. Politics. As a new agency, FEMA easily became a dumping ground for a lot of the political appointees. It also got a lot of good people in their entirety when a whole agency was put into FEMA. Appointments of leadership directly impact the staff, and more importantly, impact survivors of disasters. Politics. Bush, as you recall, was named Reagan's vice president by the Republican National Committee, who wanted to pull in the votes from Texas along with the California votes. Each of them had their own people that they needed to pay back in the form of political appointments. Whoever named the head of the department or agency, the other one named the deputy. Such was the case with FEMA. Reagan named his friend Louis O. Gifreda, who was the head of the California National Guard. He had a background in counterterrorism, which was important in the nuclear attack days. It was a high priority in the year of fear. Politics. He promoted himself to general before he came to D.C. so that he could have his official portrait taken in a general's uniform. In 1970, you may not know this, but he wrote a paper for the U.S. Army War College advocating the forcible relocation of millions of blacks, black Americans, to concentration camps in the event of a national emergency. Politics. Jafrida wanted his buddy Fred Villela as his deputy, but had to take a Bush nominee. So Villela was sent to Emergency Management Institute, which was newly co-located with the National Fire Administration up in Emmitsburg, Maryland, about an hour's drive from D.C. In 1981, Jafrida's first year, we had over 24 reorganizations. Imagine how discombobulating this roller coaster ride was to those of us who were staff. Politics, 1982. The fire administration was zero funded. By law, you have to have a fire administration, but they felt we didn't have to fund it. So this happened because our deputy administrator in the fire administration was dating the same married woman as Ed Rollins, who was the political advisor to President Reagan. He wanted to get even with the deputy administrator because he had been fired when he had worked at the fire administration. The deputy administrator had been a lawyer and caught Ed Rollins with his hand misusing funds. So fire was zero funded. Politics. In 1983, the jobs bill came about. It created the National Board for Emergency Food and Shelter, which some of you who work in the food banks out here are aware of. In 2010, right now, this one-time only program to help the nation's homeless continues. Politics, disaster declarations. During the Reagan years, FEMA staff was embargoed from talking about disaster declarations until the president had declared a disaster and was able to inform the highest ranking Republican in the state, the governor, if the governor was a Democrat, a senator, if neither of those, a representative, so that they could announce to the state that there was a disaster declaration. This became embarrassing when we were embargoed from saying anything about a declaration until the White House told us. And when they announced it on the news in the morning, and for a day and a half, the media was calling FEMA to find out more about this, and we said, what are you talking about? Politics, Tulare Lake. It's a freshwater, dry lake here in California. In 1983 or 84, it rained, and the dry lake had water in it. Well, there were three corporate farmers who owned the land. It was great agricultural land, still is, I guess. There's some problems now. But anyway, they wanted the lake drained so they could continue farming it. So they requested a major disaster declaration from the president. FEMA staff reviewed it and suggested to the president that this doesn't meet the criteria for a major disaster declaration. The White House sent it back and said, review this again. We did, and it still didn't meet the criteria for declaration. So FEMA can have a say in not going ahead with what the White House does, but usually we have to. Politics. Remember, Villela was Jafrida's sidekick up in Emmitsburg, Maryland? He ended up causing both himself and Jafrida to be resigned in 1985. This wasn't because of the misuse of his security driver, a very nice young lady who he sexually harassed while she was going on political errands with him, not political errands to get his wife a present or whatever. It wasn't because of that. It was because he turned an entire floor of dorm space in one of the buildings into his personal residence, spending federal funds to do so including buying a $12,000 stove because he loved to cook. In between the presidential appointees, there was a Mamiya's mudslide in Puerto Rico. It was a political year in Puerto Rico. 100 squatter homes were on this mountain. In the middle of the night, there was a rainstorm that washed them all down so that they were five on top of each other. In these 100 homes, the nuns that ran the squatter camp knew that there was five or six average people in each home. But the politics of the government in this election year said only 129 people died. So I asked, oh, did the other 500 squatters fly to visit relatives in Miami? There was probably 700 people that died altogether. The last Reagan appointee was General Julius Becton. He lasted from 1985 into the time Bush was elected in 1989. He continued on for a few months into 89. His background was with the Department of State's Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance. So he had experience beyond just terrorism. He was a good, effective, fair leader with integrity. Politics. His downfall came in 1989. The New Hampshire Seabrook nuclear power plant exercise was required by law to be for a 10-mile radius around the plant. There were four cities within that 10-mile radius that needed to be evacuated in the event of an accident. 20 years earlier, in 1968, the Public Service Company decided to build what could be the largest nuclear power plant in the world. But during the 20 years of construction, there were lots of problems with evacuation drills. Some people argued that the evacuation problem should have been addressed before the plant was even built, following the Three Mile Island accident. 100,000 people would come to the shore in the summertime. In the summertime, there was usually thunderstorms in the afternoon. So people would run, all these sunbathers would run to their cars and clog up the traffic with huge traffic jams to head home. What would happen, critics said, if there was an accident and not just vacationers, but residents would get on the road to run away from the accident? Problems with evacuation continued throughout the building of the plant. There were 13 years of demonstrations involving over 4,000 people. In 1989, the New Hampshire governor, Sununu, had become Bush the first, chief of staff. It was also the last evacuation drill prior to full power operation in 1990. The exercise took place in the middle of the night by FEMA with a few people that were allowed to go beyond the 50-mile speed limit to run away. General Becton said this was inadequate, and he put two top FEMA assistant administrators in different positions for failing to do a great drill. Unfortunately, one of them was a good friend of John Sununu. So in June 1989, Becton was unappointed or was resigned by the president. 14 months later, Bush the first next appointee was Wallace Stickney. He was a commissioner of where? New Hampshire Department of Transportation. He was the fifth person that was offered the job at FEMA as director. He was the fifth person who finally accepted. He loved the fire administration in particular because he was known for chasing fire engines in New Hampshire. 1992 was an election year when most declarations occur during election years. There's a saying that disaster response won't win you an election, but it sure can help you lose one. This was the case with George Bush the first, after our responses to Hurricane Andrew in 1992, which followed the Hurricane Hugo disasters 3 years earlier, all the while spending half of the agency's budget on preparation against a nuclear attack or World War III. Hurricane Hugo, you might remember, was when Senator Hollings of South Carolina called us the sorriest bunch of bureaucratic jackasses. We called him Senator Hollings. The staff morale plummeted due to the lack of effective leadership. Federal authorities criticized FEMA for its poor leadership with state and local partners over agency spending and operational priorities. Hurricane Andrew happened. We couldn't find out where the eye of the storm hit for 2 days. We then learned it was at Homestead, where, you know, the Air Force Base was also. It took 3 days for us to mobilize. Remember Kate Hale saying, "Where the hell is the cavalry?" Sound familiar? 5 days it took before federal troops could arrive. In the meantime, Andrew Card, who was the Secretary of Transportation, was brought in to head up the operation rather than a FEMA federal coordinating officer, and he was called the Master of Disaster. One of the first things he did was, in our disaster field office, he told people to go out in twos and take paper applications and report back every 2 hours. So hundreds of pairs of two went out to take these applications. Many were getting robbed because FEMA had money, and a lot of these people didn't, with everything blown away. So they called back crying, "Karen, you've got to stop this, because the people that were collecting these reports, we're having emergencies and people can't get through because of all these people calling in the reports that, yes, they took another application." FEMA, there was questions by Congress and the public. Could FEMA survive? Should it? In 1993... along came James Lee, WIT that is. In his tenure as Clinton's appointee, both Democrats and Republicans credited him as he was a real former emergency manager of the local and state level. He greeted staff the first day, shaking each of our hands and remembering most of our names. He announced the senior executive shuffle, where he put more incompetent senior executives in less important roles and put the better ones in more important roles. And he held them accountable for what they were doing. He empowered us employees, saying he emphasized the input of professional staff. And he lessened bureaucracy by going to Congress and getting approval to have a proactive approach to disaster response. The Cold War was over. He took the locks off of some of the locked doors inside headquarters building in D.C., where National Preparedness was secretly planning all of their continuity of government plans, etc. He opened our secret facility in Berryville, Virginia, so that other uses in our agency could be had. This allowed FEMA's limited resources to be redirected from civil defense into disaster relief, recovery, and mitigation programs, including pre-positioning staff prior to a disaster incident. He reinvented the agency by creating an all-hazards approach to disasters. And he let us know that his grandmother had said, "An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure." Well, he must have talked with my mother, too, because that's what she told me. So he created mitigation as the fourth part of a disaster cycle, giving grants, hazard mitigation grants, to state and local communities to help them abate the causes of disasters. Even you might have seen in Home Depot and other places the ads about buy earthquake straps for your hot water heater, and do a lot of these other mitigation things. for earthquakes, tornadoes, floods, etc. He conducted exercises for hurricanes and other disasters. In fact, in 1995, contrary to what Chertoff said when he was, I'll get to that, that we'd had no exercises for a Cat 5 hurricane hitting New Orleans. Oh, yes, we did. 1995, surge flooding came from a Cat 5 over the levees and the flood walls, and 300,000 people couldn't leave. So we did exercise this. In 1990s, there were 460 disaster declarations. That was double the 237 declarations we had in the 80s. During Witt's tenure, the cost of FEMA disasters was $28 billion, or 80% of the $35 billion spent during the entire 20-year period FEMA existed. This included very large disasters. In 1993, you might remember the Great Flood in the Midwest affecting 9 states. That was in April. In February, just a few weeks after Witt was confirmed by the Senate, you had the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. 1994 was the Northridge earthquake. 1995 was the Murrah Building bombing in Oklahoma City. So in 1996, FEMA was elevated to cabinet-level status because we were the star agency in government. Politics. Oh, Bush 2 was elected in 2001, and Congress had wanted Witt to stay, but politics, ABBA was the chief of staff to Governor Bush II, and part of the Iron Triangle with Karen Hughes and Karl Rove. He was also Bush's campaign manager, so he was appointed as the head of FEMA. Politics. The Iowa floods occurred a few months after he was confirmed by the Senate. He said it was the residents' fault, and he said it on television. If you're a disaster survivor, you don't want to hear that a natural disaster is your fault. He went from a proactive to reactive approach. No more prepositioning. That same year, 9/11 happened, a beautiful Tuesday. What did FEMA do? Well, most all the leadership was in Big Sky, Montana, attending a National Emergency Managers Association annual meeting. So we had no real leadership in FEMA, so they sent us home for the day. But we also didn't know what parts were continuing to be attacked. Remember, the plane was on its way. The Pentagon across the river had been hit. We had heard that the State Department had a bomb in it. And then we heard, no, it wasn't a bomb, it was a fire. And then we heard, no, it wasn't a fire, it wasn't anything. Our regional office in New York City was only 4 blocks from Ground Zero. So they, too, were victims of the attack. Politics, no leadership. They flew in from Big Sky, Montana, the next day, but most of them were tired and didn't show up for work until Thursday. ABBA showed no leadership during this time. He spent most all of his days up at Ground Zero crying because he felt so sorry for the people on the pile. The rest of us were down in the NIOC, the National Interagency Operations Center, which is the heartbeat of FEMA. We were responding to the disaster from D.C. Part of FEMA's mission is to task other agencies for their resources in government, and they all come together in the NIOC. One of these was to the Department of Defense. I was the head of the branch that provided assistance to individuals and businesses in the disaster, and not public assistance, which is the infrastructure. I had to give a $5 million tasking to the Defense Department for some things we needed in New York City the next day. This was at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night when I went to the military liaison, and ask him to please execute this order. He said, Karen, can this wait until morning? I said, why? He said, well, anything over $1 million, Rumsfeld has to sign off on personally. This effectively, I didn't understand because FEMA reimbursed all the agencies for the money. So if we're reimbursing them, why do they have to have him sign off on anything over $1 million? Well, so be it. Politics. Bush II used the NIOC for a photo opportunity. Problem with that is he had like about 15 or 20 photographers in his White House photography corps that came in and pushed us workers all out of the way for the 4 hours that they were waiting for Bush to come in and then greet each of us and take our photos and stuff with him, effectively shutting down all assistance to the disaster victims. No federal agency could offer to help disaster workers on the pile or in any of the 22 organizations that staffed New York City at that time. So most of them, as you know, had what we call the downtown cough, but it turned into worse with all the asbestos and pollution in this city. The consequence of 9/11 was on November 2002, over a year later, Bush responded to political pressure by signing the Homeland Security Act, creating Department of Homeland Security. The media speculated that Albaugh quit on February 28th because he wanted to be the Secretary of Homeland Security. But the next day, March 1st, Tom Ridge was appointed the first secretary. Now, Michael Brown, who was Albaugh's college roommate, initially appointed as general counsel in FEMA, became the next director. He'd gone from general counsel to deputy to director. Tom Ridge was a former congressman in Pennsylvania who in 1974 had co-authored the Disaster Relief Act of 1974. So he made sure that FEMA was put into Homeland Security when he and about three others decided what all agencies in government should go into Homeland Security. He then became governor of Pennsylvania, but FEMA was the only independent agency put into Homeland Security. The Homeland Security mission was, one, to protect the United States from further terrorist attacks. Two, to reduce the nation's vulnerability to terrorism. And three, to minimize the damage from potential terrorist attacks. And, oh yeah, natural disasters. Homeland Security brought together over 179,000 federal employees and 22 existing federal agencies. The consolidation of all these agencies to combat terrorism follows the same logic that first established FEMA in 1979. Do you remember what I was talking about up front in this talk? Politics. Director Brown had to report to the Homeland Security Secretary, no longer to the president directly. Layers of bureaucracy were implemented in order for him to do this, reporting up to the secretary. In 2004, Homeland Security released 15 planning scenarios. Of the worst-case disaster programs, 12 were terrorism-related, and only one dealt with a Category 5 hurricane, which assumed 100,000 people would not be able to leave New Orleans. It was cut short due to a tropical storm, a real tropical storm heading that way. I said, hey, God wants to play. Let's continue. He says, no, it might harm our MERS, our mobile emergency response vehicle that's on its way there. Preparedness includes planning, training, and exercises from the local to the federal levels. But Homeland Security officials tend to think of preparedness in terms of prevention, which is impossible with hurricanes, earthquakes, and tornadoes. Prior to Hurricane Katrina in January 2005, the National Response Plan, which we had to coordinate the various agencies of government in a time of a catastrophe, replaced the Federal Response Plan, which we had that was working under the Witt years. The National Response Plan, the new one, created three components that resulted in problems. The National Response Plan was too new to differentiate what was happening with the old Federal Response Plan. One of the things it created was a principal federal official that reported directly to the Secretary of Homeland Security. And we already had a federal coordinating officer, which was the president's designated representative. So which one leads to disasters? The Incident Command System, or ICS structure. Management did not follow the ICS structure, which called for leadership to know all the functions that they supervised. And the National Incident Management System was the third component, NIMS rules. But it was not implemented. NIMS empowers functional components to get the job done. So in February 2005, there were the three Michaels. You already know Michael Brown, or Brownie, head of FEMA. Michael Chertoff succeeded Ridge as the DHS secretary, and his deputy was Michael Jackson, Michael P. Jackson, not the other one. They called FEMA director Michael Brown a whiner when politics happened. DHS taxed FEMA, its staff, and money. For instance, we had 150 vacancies, but we're only allowed to fill 26 of them. The rest were all absorbed into Homeland Security. And Chertoff began decimating FEMA by taking out preparedness from FEMA and putting it into another part of Homeland Security. How can you respond to a disaster when you haven't prepared with the state and local people to even know who they are? This was the case on August 28, 2005, when Hurricane Katrina hit. Politics at all levels. Nagin failed to evacuate the residents 72 hours in advance, as was called for in the plans that we'd been doing since 1995. He did not do so until Michael Brown called the president and asked him to call Nagin. The highways were bumper to bumper as people tried to leave at the last minute. Oh, bumper to bumper traffic. Does this sound like what I was talking about, Seabrook? And the evacuation drill? Pre-positioning, there was none. Only one FEMA staff happened to be there, and he went to the Superdome along with the other survivors. He happened to notice that the levees broke because he did get on one of the helicopters to go up and take a look. He reported that immediately to the NIOC, the National Interagency Operations Center in FEMA, who had to report it to the HSOC, Homeland Security Operations Center. But the HSOC did not get the word from the Army Corps of Engineers. They just got it from FEMA. So they redacted it from the report when it was sent to the president. 80% of New Orleans was underwater. Where was the National Guard? Oh, they were in Iraq and Afghanistan fighting for freedom. So they were unable to help save people or stop the looting in these flooded stores. The governor did not request a major disaster declaration, and so Michael Brown, who was a lawyer, remember, followed the rules that the major disaster request has to be made by the governor to the president, and since this wasn't done, he did not go ahead and send people down there. Then once we did go down and the federal coordinating official was appointed as the president's designated representative, Chertoff sent down a principal federal official who said, okay, I'm here. UFCO can leave. The FCO, Federal Coordinating Officer, said, wait, the president appointed me. Who are you? So the guy was a Coast Guard type. He recognized incident command structure, that you follow the chain of command. He went back until Brownie was resigned. The staff was not allowed to do our job, just all kinds of reports. A number of them for the first month were going to the emergency rooms with heart attacks and stress-related illness. They were miserable. Michael Brown was resigned in two weeks, as you might recall, and I heard from a firsthand report that Chertoff and Bush II were talking in a cabinet meeting about Michael Brown and how he was being used as a scapegoat. And Bush II said, better him than us. This is leadership. During the time then, Michael Jackson was trying to find out what was happening, what did FEMA, what were we supposed to do, what was the law, etc. He didn't talk with the director or the assistant administrators or division chiefs or branch chiefs. He talked with section chiefs to try and find out what we were doing. Well, what was our assistance? The first month, we were only allowed to give hotel and motel assistance for up to $125 a night per room. We normally would give out rental assistance for $600 for a whole apartment. And a lot of these people went to Houston, you know, to escape. But we weren't allowed to do that for a whole month. Then when we gave out the rental assistance, the people weren't leaving the hotels and motels, and the media was saying, and others were saying, those people never had it so good. You know, they've got maid service now and all, and they don't want to leave that. Well, it was because there was nothing in the apartments except bare floors. In September, it was hotel and motel assistance. October, we were allowed to give rental assistance, but not until December were we allowed to give them money for kitchenware, beds, chairs, things that you normally would use in an apartment. And then November, we were allowed to finally give full grants to people who had destroyed homes or those that experienced major damage. In 2006, I retired and the next day went to Congress with the full knowledge of people in FEMA, including leadership, because I asked them, do you want me to tell them anything now that I'm not going to work for you anymore? I asked Congress to please take FEMA out of Homeland Security. We were being decimated. In fact, Chertoff, remember I said there is preparedness was already taken out. You have response, recovery, and mitigation. Well, mitigation was not well done under the Bush years. So the second one, response, was being taken out the next week. So I said, you got to stop him from doing this. We need to have preparedness back in, not response out. We need to restore its status to cabinet level, reporting directly to the president. We can't go through the bureaucratic layers in a disaster, and we need a director with real emergency management experience like James Lee had, someone with multi-hazard experience. Disasters are more important to you and me and everyone who experiences disasters. They need leadership, someone who cares, who's committed, who's capable. The September 2006 law was changed in some minor ways. They did allow the director to report to the president during disasters, but not during other times. So the director still has two bosses. And they required the director to have emergency management experience, which the past two directors have had. Hopefully, when, God forbid, the anticipated major earthquake comes to the Bay Area, hopefully FEMA will be better prepared to help us. In the meantime, it would be great if you all could join NERT, the Neighborhood Emergency Response Team in San Francisco, or community emergency response teams, CERT, in other localities, so that you know how to take care of yourself for 7 days. It's not the old 3 days that a lot of people are still saying. We need to prepare for 7 days, especially those of you who live in the Bay, like Redwood Shores and Foster City. God help us. Thank you.
You are listening to Karen Kiefer, a former senior program officer with FEMA, and she was now willing to take questions.
Ann Martin has the microphone. Please raise your hand if you have a question.
Hi. What do you think of the situation of the California levees in earthquake? Major earthquake. Do you think they will hold?
Just hold it closer.
Okay. Hi, I'm Virginia Parrott. And my question has to do with the preparation and quality of the California levees in an earthquake situation.
Those that are close to the epicenter, I think, will fail. Most all of them that I know of are earthen levees. They're not made of cement. Earthen levees have critters that bore through them, creating holes, and they also are easily moved because earthquakes move land. We have some seismologists in the room who could talk a lot more about that. If you're interested afterwards, you can talk with the man standing up, Dr. Stu Nischenko, or his boss, Lloyd Clough, who's the gentleman with the beard in the second row here. Other questions?
Hi. Hi. What led you to be involved with FEMA when it was first founded? I mean, what was your background or where did you come from? Okay. How did you end up there?
I had majored in elementary education in school, and I had done a number of jobs, and my last one was vice president of a corporation in New York City for chief executive officers and boards of directors. So I went to D.C. because I'd worked nonprofit, not-for-profit, volunteers, and private sectors, and I wanted to see, they seemed to all fear the government, so I went to the federal government to try and get a job during a freeze on federal hiring of outsiders. So after submitting 300 applications, I was finally called in because they didn't like the people on the register that they were sent of qualified candidates. And the guy actually who hired me in the fire administration, I had applied to the Department of Commerce. And so when he said he was from FEMA, I had no clue on my cards that I kept, as a good elementary teacher would, about where... Who was this FEMA and what did I apply for? But he was a nice guy. I went to Bowling Green State University in Ohio, which was a good teacher's college, and he had been in the fire department in Maumee right next door. He had seen that one of my backgrounds, I had been a model, and so he wanted to meet me, and he liked me and took me to lunch, and I got it. So I had only planned on, I was working each job for like 2 years before I decided what I wanted to do full time, and I happened to get into a job I loved. They kept changing my duties every 2 years, which allowed me to get a lot more experience all the way up, and it's hard to quit a job you love in spite of the kinds of leadership you have, and I credit the public servants that keep FEMA going in spite of its jackass status or bungling bureaucrat status. They're the ones who made it the star agency government because one of our leaders allowed us to do our job.
Let me go here and then I'll be right back. Oh, no? Okay.
Hello. Have we learned anything from Katrina? It's been 5 years. Are we any more ready for another disaster? It just seemed that it wasn't just politics at the national level at Katrina. It was at the state level, the local level, every which way that prevented Has, to your knowledge, has anything been put in place to address some of those issues? Because they're going to affect everything that Homeland Security does, not just FEMA.
That's a good question. I can't speak directly to that because I'm not working there now. It was a very emotional time for me, and I spent the next 2 years after I retired counseling a lot of my cadre, the 1,200 people that I was friends with most of them. I'd worked disasters with them in the field. I called them in. They were wanting to quit FEMA. They didn't need this. It was a horrible experience. They would cry on the phone to me about what had happened that day or that week, about all these new Coast Guard types and firefighter types that were called in to help out. But most of those people wanted to go out and save lives. They didn't want to take some desk jobs that we needed to have a lot of work done taking applications and providing assistance to people. So I only know FEMA from a more emotional angle. I know that Fugate is more proactive. In fact, he has drills where he calls up FEMA staff at, I heard, 2 in the morning, has them come in so that they can practice in the event that something happens and they're needed. So I'm filled with more hope, a lot more hope. But CBS called me a couple years ago when the wildland fires were down there and in Los Angeles area, and they said, do you think the new FEMA, it's always a new FEMA, whoever takes over, it's a new FEMA. Do you think the new FEMA is going to be able to handle the wildfires better? And I said, well, a couple things. If houses burn down, most all houses have fire insurance, so they can rebuild, unlike with hurricanes or floods or earthquakes even. And I said, but did you read the paper today and see what's happening in New Orleans? Guess what? It's raining. It's two or 3 years later, and guess what? It's flooded. That's the story.
In the case of the inevitable major earthquake in the Bay Area and the fact that people were originally told to be prepared for 3 days and now 7, where do you expect the major problem is going to be? Is it going to be collapsed houses? Is it going to be food shortage, water shortage? What's going to be most critical?
Yes, all of those, I think. And if in CERT, what we have learned is to prepare by having disaster kits of everything we need to live outside for at least a week. You know that the shake factor is what's the worst in an earthquake. So when you're around unconsolidated soils, especially like in the bay, et cetera, there's probably going to be more destruction. The housing codes for newer houses are such that they allow you to escape from the house before it goes down, but it doesn't necessarily stop you from it going down. In fact, in Loma Prieta, which was, 70 miles from here when it hit, I was out here working that disaster after Hurricane Hugo, and as I was getting ready to leave around Thanksgiving, I was watching the news one night, and this man was out taking a picture. You know, we'd ask people who didn't have much damage to wait and let the people with most damage apply first. Well, he was out taking a video of his house. He had his wife and little son out there, and they were videoing on their way to the insurance department because their carport was hurt. And as he was videoing it, the whole house came down because the slightest tremor on a house that's fragile from previous tremors, it's the straw that broke the house's back.
Karen, I just came back from New Orleans yesterday. I was there with Remote Area Medical. It was their 5th year anniversary. They'd been there during Katrina, and they were going back to do a medical, dental, eye care clinic. I had time. I walked from the downtown area into the lower Ninth Ward. I walked through the lower Ninth Ward up to where the original levees broke, which is now where Brad Pitt's foundation is starting to rebuild housing. But it's 5 years later, and it is incredible to see the number of people that have been displaced. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the city has a story, whether it's a waiter, a waitress, a taxi cab driver. Many of them are still trying to find their families because they were dispersed callously all over the country. It's unbelievable when you actually meet these people and you see these scenes. I do. What in the world are local citizens going to be able to do anywhere in this country if a disaster of that magnitude happens and through the ineptness of our federal government, they start sending people to every corner of the country? It's disrupt the lives of these people forever. And I really don't want it to disrupt my life for the rest of it when something happens here. Mm-hmm. Any suggestions?
I think it is important when something of that magnitude happens that we can fly people to be with other relatives or have a place to stay until the assistance can get to you. Unfortunately, FEMA assistance is usually enough to help get you back on your feet. For instance, I think the maximum grant is like $30,000 to help get you back on your feet. The Small Business Administration disaster loans are up to like $200,000 to help you rebuild a house and $20,000 for personal property. So this can help, but we all need to work together. The better prepared you are by having disaster kits, by having a barrel of water. I don't know about people who live in high-rise apartments and all, where they're going to put all this. But those of us who have prepared can help house and take in some others if we're not majorly impacted. So I'm just hoping the federal government, I think they're looking, the Coast Guard has taken over a whole lot of the disaster preparations and all, and they are more in a position to respond. So I'm hoping that FEMA will be in a more proactive mode, as Director Fugate, current director of FEMA, is trying to promote. But we all need to worry about it and prepare as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, you didn't have time to cover all the things that FEMA did. You've done a nice job at summarizing it. But in my book, Project Impact, mm-hmm. that James Leavitt and Mike Armstrong carried out. Mm-hmm. It was very effective here in California. Can you share with us the politics on what caused that to be totally closed down?
Project Impact was James Lee's idea. The an ounce of prevention's worth a pound of cure. And he put his money where his mouth was and helped disaster-prone communities and states mitigate the effects of potential disasters, like raising houses if they're in flood areas, by helping with hurricane strapping in Florida and places, earthquake straps for your water heater, et cetera. I was in other parts of the federal government before my permanent job with FEMA, and it seems like when one director comes in and does something, they don't want the previous director's legacy to continue. The pre-positioning, the proactive approach, the project impact were all James Leavitt's ideas. So they were all pushed aside so that we could turn into a reactive agency and got rid of most of what James Leavitt had started. There is still mitigation at FEMA, but I've never heard of Project Impact continuing after that. Yeah, it is too bad.
Karen, what do you think of the various citizen groups that organize and
volunteer and go down to emergency areas and just step in. I know people who, for Katrina, went down to save animals, mm-hmm. for example. Mm-hmm. Do they help, or are they more of a problem?
Many of them help. We have what we call the National Voluntary Organizations Active in Disasters, or NOVAD as we call them, that FEMA works closely with. And this is, when I was working there, around 26 voluntary organizations all worked together deciding who would do what responsibility, including the Humane Society that had control over the pets, et cetera. So each one had their own individual things. Some would serve food. They would take in their mobile food trailers, like Southern Baptist and Salvation Army would bring in their food mobiles so that the victims who were applying for assistance could eat and all. So I think they're great. There's other people who spring up and collect money and say they're going to go do good things, local churches and all. The worst thing is, what we've experienced is people donating clothes. Everybody needs clothes, but the types of clothes people donate are old formal gowns, high-heeled spike shoes, things that they're out of date. In fact, they dump them in. They take these big semi-trailers down there filled with goods, dump them on the ground in a big pile, dirty baby diapers, and other things are in there, and they're getting tax credits for all this stuff that they donate. So they'd rather have money than canned goods that you just happen to have, some dates are expiring and you give them to whatever, or old clothes and stuff. They need money so that they can buy the things that are really needed.
The Commonwealth Club just finished a series called The Ascent of Woman. And I wonder, you worked at FEMA a fairly long time, and what your experience was, if you found it a handicap to be a woman in the beginning, what you can tell us about that.
That's a good question. FEMA is traditionally a man's world. The fire service is one of the biggest, and I started with them when I first started with FEMA. Male-dominated. But when I went to D.C. from New York City, I was told, you can do anything you want in government if you don't care who gets the credit. And I am a woman, so I know how to give credit to guys. Yes. And I also had a brain and a background of private, nonprofit, volunteer, Peace Corps, Nigeria during the Biafran War. Hello, guns in your face. Yeah, I know how to deal with emergencies, situations. And I was willing to work my hardest in a job that I loved, helping other people, because ever since I was in the fourth grade, I think my life was deemed to be a public servant. Public servants usually work to get the job done to help the public. So you don't have much of an ego if you're willing to do good, make the world a better place. And most of the FEMA people that I know were true public servants.
Karen, maybe it would be helpful to mention the reserve cadre. You mentioned your cadre members who are calling you, but FEMA has quite an extensive expansion capability. So it might be interesting to just quickly note
that. Yeah, it's sort of
like
the reservists for the military. We call them disaster assistance employees, who I had 1,200 at the time. I think that the five people that replaced me now have like about 4,000 people that are part of the cadre and need training as well. That they have to be able to, they usually are self-employed people or retired people who are able to leave within 24 to 48 hours and report on duty at a disaster site and do whatever you need to do in individual assistance or public assistance to help the people who were affected by the disasters. There are 10 regional offices, and although the disaster reservists are part of a national cadre, they usually are attached to one of the 10 regional offices. and the regional offices support one another when there is a big disaster. In fact, most everybody was down in New Orleans at some point that was part of the disaster reserve. Okay?
We're on an uplifted note here, which is great. And our thanks to Karen Kiefer speaking about her former employer, FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating its second century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.